The sun rises and the sun sets. You can set your watch by it. Well, you actually do set your watch by it. But what do we really know about the Earth's closest star? I mean, really, our only star. I mean, really, what do we really know about it? Other than this, the sun rises and sets, really, let's be honest, it's a mystery in so many ways. After all, something that's 27 million degrees Fahrenheit isn't exactly beckoning you to nuzzle up and get closer. Hopefully, though, in the next 5 years, we'll know a lot more, and that's because the Solar Orbiter is set to launch. The Solar Orbiter is a project of the European Space Agency, and when it's launched, it's supposed to get closer to the sun than any satellite ever before. That's according to our partner, the BBC. The contract for the Solar Orbiter is set to be signed today, this very day, and that's why we have Dr. Michio Kaku, who knows a lot about outer space and the future of exploration possibilities. Dr. Kaku, welcome.
Glad to be on the show.
Glad to have you. Okay, traveling closer to the sun than we ever have before. Let me get a little bit philosophical with you to start out here. The sun throughout human history, it's a god. We're talking about Ra. Does one dare get close enough to look upon the face of a god? Is this a good idea?
Well, that's what we're trying to do, because sometimes gods throw a fit. And when gods throw a fit, we could be burned to a crisp unless we begin the preparations now. Now, the sun has a temper tantrum every 11 years. We're headed for the next temper tantrum in next year, in 2013. And so we have to understand why the sun erupts with gigantic solar flares and coronal mass ejections, one of which could fry our satellites and wipe out our power supply. So it's in our self-interest to learn as much about the sun as we can, even though the sun, of course, is supposed to be a god.
You're making sort of the practical case for solar exploration. But really, there's a scientific case to be made, which is curiosity, and that we know so very little about the surface of the sun and what's called the heliosphere. Where are the major gaps in our knowledge? You mentioned the cause of solar flares, but we already know that solar flares exist and when. What are we dying to know about the sun that we don't know yet?
Well, there are so many gaps in our understanding of the sun. You realize that we've mapped practically every square mile of the planet Mars. We know more about Mars than the surface of the Earth, in fact. But the sun constantly changes. It's not made out of a solid surface at all. It's made out of plasma, roughly 75% hydrogen, 25% helium. It's one gigantic hydrogen bomb that continually changes second by second. And so it's very difficult for us to get a handle on the sun. And that's why this probe is so important. It's actually to go inside the orbit of Mercury. Think about that. Inside the orbit of Mercury. It's going to go where no other space probe has gone before to give us a real close-up look at our celestial neighbor.
Does Solar Orbiter return to Earth, or does it merely transmit and then stay out there eventually to melt in the violent heliosphere of the sun?
Yeah, well, eventually, like some satellites, we may actually allow it to plunge into the sun. Like, for example, the Galileo spacecraft. Not only did it shoot a probe into Jupiter, but it was allowed to then plunge in a death spiral into Jupiter itself. And so to bring back the Solar Orbiter would be very expensive. It doesn't have enough rocket fuel for that. Mm-hmm. So there is talk that maybe after it's lived out its useful life, it will plunge into the sun and give us detailed information as it approaches the heliosphere and burns up.
On the way in. Now, the design of Solar Orbiter is remarkable because you've already mentioned, Dr. Michio Kaku, it's obvious, the enormous heat as one approaches the sun. It's really, I mean, let's face it, it's the definition of heat, getting close to the sun. This spacecraft has a remarkable design that allows it to radiate heat away from its instruments to function longer instead of just melting into a molten ball of satellite. How is the spacecraft designed to let it function in this particularly violent environment?
Well, you realize that we've thrown every trick in the book into this satellite in order to cool it down, in order to be able to withstand the enormous temperatures and to carry out a variety of very incredible scientific tasks. It has to analyze ultraviolet radiation, cosmic radiation. It has to analyze solar flares, solar winds, and other kinds of radiation from the sun. And as you mentioned, it has to be able to protect its delicate electronics. Normally, electronics would be fried if it was simply exposed to the the heat of the sun. So it has every trick in the book devised to try to cool it down, shield it from the sun's rays, because, of course, if you get too close to the sun, look what happened to Icarus when he flew too close to the sun.
Sure did.
His wings melted, and he flew, and he went into the ocean.
You stole my thunder. I was going to say I'm glad they haven't named this probe Icarus. That would send absolutely the wrong message. But luckily, you all haven't made that mistake. Well, can we get just a little bit sort of metaphysical, maybe, or maybe
sure.
super physical here? If we get around sort of what I'll describe as the dark side of the sun, maybe metaphorically, because of the enormous gravity, this is the most massive body in the solar system by far. Is there anything that we can learn beyond regular old quantum mechanics, Newtonian laws, that can help us understand some of the more theoretical sides of physics, black holes and the like, that can advance our theories of sort of the laws of the universe?
Well, when you're at that distance from the sun, that is at the distance of Mercury, it is possible that general relativity, that is the theory of Einstein, starts to kick in. The orbit of Mercury is not a perfect ellipse, and it wobbles. And as a consequence, we once thought there was a planet called Vulcan inside the orbit of Mercury, tugging on Mercury, forcing it to have a non-elliptical orbit. However, along comes Einstein, who says, bah, there is no Vulcan. It's just the fact that the sun warps the space around it. Mercury then follows the warped space, and the direction of Mercury then wobbles slightly, deviates from Newton's laws of motion. So when you're that close to the sun, relativity starts to kick in to a slight degree, and you will get slight deviations from Newton's laws of motion. And it was that deviation of the planet Mercury that convinced Einstein as a young man that he was on the right track and convinced him to complete the general theory of relativity.
And now it's only appropriate that we're going back to the sun. Dr. Michio Kaku, how long does it take to get there?
Oh, it'll take, years to get into the proper distance and formation orientation. It'll be about one quarter the distance between the sun and the Earth.
It takes years to get there. It only takes 8 minutes for light to travel from the sun to reach us. It takes years for us to make the return trip. That's Dr. Michio Kaku joining us to talk about Solar Orbiter, due to be launched by the European Space Agency. He is author of the New York Times bestseller, The Physics of the Future. Dr. Kaku, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.